I could use my already acquired knowledge and enlarge it of French institutionalism, a very important factor in the interpretation of the Austrian authoritarian state was the institutionalism of Maurice Oriot. Moreover, I had already been branching out into various areas of the history of philosophy, and I was able to recognize in the assumption of a collective entity that would justify the treatment of its members as subordinate beings who had to conform to the ideas of whoever represented the collective entity, parallels to the medieval Averroistic conception of the intellectus unus, of which the mind of human beings was no more than a spark. I'm not sure I had already a clear conception of the importance of this finding. Certainly I understood already that the transfer of the conception of an intellectus unus to a world immanent entity called nation or race and its representatives was lethal to the understanding of man's humanity. And already at that time I became aware of the very serious split in the interpretation of Aristotle's psychology, which took place in the Middle Ages, between Averroes and Thomas, my preference being on the side of Thomas and not of the collectivist Arab and Western Averroists. One tiny bit of the materials which I worked through at that time later was published in my study on Sigé de Brabant. The reaction to this find of mine had a funny side effect. Since Averroes happened to be an Arab, and Arabs are Semites, and Semites in the end are Jews, certain thinkers close to the National Socialist regime, like Carl Schmitt, doubted seriously that the National Socialist collectivism had anything to do with such dirty Semitic origins. An important element in this first part was also my first better understanding of Rousseau and his variety of collectivism. I did not go very far in the analysis at the time, only a few pages, but it is the problem in principle that later was worked out splendidly by Tal Mon in his Totalitarian Democracy. The second part of the book gave a survey of Austrian problems of constitution making in the historical perspective since 1848. It was for me the occasion to learn something about the background of constitutional problems in the Austro-Hungarian monarchy and the continuity of solutions found at the time with the problems of the Austrian Republic after 1918. In the third part, dealing with the new constitution, I gave that extensive analysis of Kelsen's pure theory of law in the context of a specifically Austrian theory of politics. Criticism has about 50 pages. That was the section that got me into trouble with Kelsen, because here I obviously rejected not the pure theory of law, but its claim to be a substitute for a theory of politics. I had to stress the inadequacy of a theory of law for understanding political problems and the destructive consequences of the claim that one should not deal scientifically with political problems, or could not deal with them, on people who believed it. The relation with Kelsen was never the same after that, and years later in America, after my new Science of Politics had come out in 1952, he wrote an extensive criticism of book size, crushing me thoroughly. This book, however, was never published, because I conveyed to him directly through letters in cautious form and through common friends in a more direct form that his understanding of the historical and philosophical problems involved in the matter was inadequate and the publication would damage rather his prestige than mine. Since the book came out in 1936 and in 1938, when the Nazis occupied Austria, its sale was stopped. It did not receive much attention at the time, nor did it later, because during the Russian conquest of Vienna, one of the bombs fell, of all places, on the Springer publishing house, and the whole edition was burned in the cellar. Concerning emigration in 1938, as I have explained previously, I barely escaped from Austria. The Gestapo was already about to confiscate my passport, and that would have meant the end of any possibility of emigration, short of secret border transition. My wife was not in any danger, because the German legal methods were still strongly in force. And the incidents were sometimes very funny. For instance, in the general survey of university personnel by the Gestapo when they came to Vienna, a Gestapo man came to our home and searched around my desk, drawers, all sorts of cases and so on, in order to see what I did. He was a young man in his mid-20s, and later we got friendly, and he told me he was originally a lawyer from Hamburg. First he inspected my desk for incriminating material. At the time, since I had been fired and nothing to do but prepare my emigration, I had complete quiet for very complicated technical work in science. I was working at the time on problems of empire, and my desk was piled high with treatises on the Byzantine Empire, several of them in French and English. So he thumbed through this Byzantine Empire literature, and then he remarked that he was in charge of inspecting all of these professors in the law school, and that my desk was the first he had to inspect that looked like the desk of a scholar. We then got more friendly. He had to confiscate, or rather take with him, a number of incriminating evidence of my political interests. I had, of course, standing on my shelves, the principal sources of a political nature: Hitler's Mein Kampf, Schuschnigg's book, Mussolini's Dottrina del Fascismo, Marx's Communist Manifesto, and so on. So he took away Schuschnigg and Marx. I protested that that would give an unfair impression of my political interests, which were strictly impartial, and offered him to take along Hitler's Mein Kampf. But he refused, and that's how I have kept my copy of a very early edition. But by that time we had already become more friendly, and he also had to take away some of my own books on the form of the American mind, and so on. And I suggested that it wouldn't be nice to take the good hardcover copies, but he could take the volumes which I also had, bound for daily use, of the page proofs. And he agreed to that and was satisfied with the page proofs, so I could keep my hardcover editions, which I still have. My wife, who is a very orderly lady, when she came in, wanted to take his coat, which he had thrown over a chair, and hang it in a closet, because it was disorderly. Whereupon he yelled, "Don't touch it! There's my revolver in it!" But what had to be considered due process of law under the now valid statutes was on the whole observed, and while I was apparently a target of some interest, my wife was not. And besides, when I left, she could stay with her parents, who were National Socialists and had a huge picture of Hitler in their living room. Of course, as soon as I had left, on the evening of the day when the Gestapo man wanted to confiscate my passport, the next day he came back in order to ask where the passport, including myself, was. And then was the guard put at the house of my parents-in-law, where my wife stayed. And the next day, after I had arrived in Zurich and I sent a telegram, that scene occurred, that first the gas disappeared, and then 20 minutes later my telegram arrived. He had obviously known that I was flown for good. A week later, my wife joined me in Zurich. Of course, we had to leave everything behind, but it was possible to get some of the furniture out, and most important, the library. Certain items, however, had to be left. Again, the details are more or less funny, because, for instance, I had to leave behind my stamp collection, which I had studied as a boy. This being an object of value. Books apparently were not. I know from other people that in the practice of the law enforcement, one could get through a lot of things. I know, for instance, of a young lady who was an artist, who had also acquired a few original prints of Dürer. Now, to export objects of art, again, one had to get a permission. And she put the Dürer prints in between her own work. And the official who examined the map looked through one of these prints after another, and when he came to this or that Dürer print, he said, "Well, well, you have made quite some progress as an artist." And left it at that.